gonna wait till 12:05 Eastern here just to make sure that everybody joins. All right, so we're 5 minutes in. We're gonna go ahead and get started. I'm gonna start with introductions. Today we have a presentation on DAML. DAML is a data model language for distributed ledgers, blockchain platforms for smart contracts. In this case here, the presentation will be from Digital Assets, who's the backer of DAML, who started DAML, or I think you guys acquired it. Please clarify later. Yes, DAML can be used for, again, Fabric and other blockchain platforms, and really looking forward to how we can, as a group and others, can learn to utilize this, how it helps and the benefits, and I believe we're going to get a demo as well for a supply chain scenario. So without further ado, I'll pass it on to the digital asset folks, to you, Andrew, I believe, and yeah, go ahead and get started. I'll stop sharing.
Thanks, Marco. Good morning, good afternoon, everybody. This is Andrew Pisano, Business Development Director at Digital Asset here in New York, joined by my colleagues.
Morning, everybody. I'm Beth Sandra, a Product Manager at Digital Asset.
And I'm Leventa Barsi. I'm a Client Engineer in Digital Asset.
So Beth and I are going to give you a brief history of Digital Asset. Talk to you a little bit about the benefits of DAML, the digital asset modeling language. And then Levy is actually going to demo a little bit of a supply chain use case for the team. Perfect. So if everybody can see my screen, we'll get started. Going back, 2014, Digital Asset was founded with the vision of bringing blockchain solutions to enterprises.
And then I'm sure some of you may know, in 2015, we made our second acquisition with a company called Hyperledger, which was the first permission blockchain without a native cryptocurrency. Shortly after that, we were one of the founding members of the Hyperledger project, where we donated the brand name along with a bunch of code to co-create the Hyperledger project with the common goal of driving adoption and standardization of DLT and blockchain solutions. Over the years, we've been quite active and have had numerous positions on the different Hyperledger committees, including chair of the board and chair of the marketing committee.
In 2016, we closed a $70 million Series A fundraising round, which included 15 strategic investors from the world's largest financial institutions, technology companies, and consultancies.
And then later in 2016, we made our fourth acquisition with a Zurich-based company called Elevance. They were actually the original creators of DAML, the digital asset modeling language, which is an open source smart contract language that we will talk about in more detail shortly.
We're probably most familiar, or you might be most familiar with us for our work down in Australia. In 2017, the ASX selected Digital Asset and DAML to replace its core mission critical post-trade system for cash equities. This was probably still remains the largest and most significant DLT project in the world. It's still on track to go live in Q1 2021. So at that time, if you traded a stock in Australia, it will clear, settle, net, and be registered on a DAML-driven application.
Then last year, we continued our work with large market infrastructure providers around the world, with one example being the Hong Kong Exchange, who selected DA to work on a post-trade allocation and settlement platform for northbound trading under their Stock Connect program. We also opened an office in Hong Kong to further increase our APAC presence. And by last year, I mean 2018.
And then early in 2019, we decided to open source our core technology DAML under Apache 2.0. Not an easy decision, one that was deliberated for a really long time, but it came down to two reasons. One, to accelerate adoption of the technology, and two, to provide customers with choices. And I'll get into that in a few slides here. So the mission of Digital Asset is to fundamentally change the way distributed applications are built and deployed. So if you think about 20 years ago, how many developers it took to build a website? Today, a 12-year-old can probably do it in a couple of hours. We want to bring this type of rapid innovation to the DLT space, but of course without compromising integrity or privacy. So what are we trying to solve? Firstly, most development work is undifferentiated. Our clients ultimately want to give their clients a product or a service. The end client doesn't really care how it gets coded as long as it works, right? In reality, in order to build these products and services, a significant amount of time is spent writing code that is necessary just to make the application work. This is essentially a tax on a business and has no upside to the client. The second problem that we see is that disparate implementations prevent interoperability. The reason for this is that the code you write is so closely coupled to the underlying infrastructure, it's very difficult and costly to port the application over to another type of infrastructure. The result is that innovation is expensive and it encourages vendor lock-in. So let me introduce you to DAML. What we've done with DAML is to decouple the business logic layer from the infrastructure layer. DAML is a domain-specific modeling language built for writing multi-party workflows. DAML is the only developer-oriented framework for designing, writing, and deploying applications to the DLT of your choice. So, three benefits: industry agnostic. So, while much of our experience here at Digital Asset is in capital markets, the language itself is asset class and industry agnostic. Another benefit: increased productivity. DAML abstracts away complexities associated with the underlying infrastructure and allows developers to focus only on business logic. They no longer have to write that undifferentiating code I mentioned on the last slide that is just necessary to run an application on a persistence layer. So developers don't need to understand how channels work in Fabric or how flows are created in Corda. And Levy's going to demonstrate a little bit about this later. And thirdly, infrastructure independent. DAML is available on a growing number of databases, distributed ledgers, managed services, and other platforms. That means you can write an application once and then select the infrastructure that best fits your needs. Historically, you would have to first select where you were going to deploy that application before you began to develop and test the viability of the use case. Again, the reason for this is that if you wanted to deploy on Fabric, you'd have to write in Golang. Similarly, a custom transaction family written in Python won't work on any other DLT than Sawtooth. So if you build in Daml, you can also easily migrate or port that application in the future very easily and seamlessly to another technology as long as your requirements change, which also eliminates getting locked into a particular vendor.
So what do we actually mean when we say that Daml is portable, and how do we prove that out? Well, currently Daml is already fully integrated with 7 different platforms, and we have a slew of other platforms in our pipeline that will be coming soon. As you can see, we provide open source integrations for both Hyperledger Fabric and Hyperledger Sawtooth. If you are interested, you can go to our website, daml.com, and learn more about the different integrations that are available, including those provided by some of our partners, like blockchain technology partners, who are also on this call and members of Hyperledger. So as Andrew sort of alluded to, by enabling Daml to run atop different platforms, it means that you can write your application in Daml and run it on your choice of persistence layer, or port it to a different platform without having to rewrite the code. This becomes very powerful, as some companies may just want to run a smart contract application on a regular database today, but tomorrow they may want to switch to DLT. So with Daml, you can easily do that without having to rewrite a single line of code. So why is this portability so important for us and for open source projects like Hyperledger and its members? If you look at the goals of collaborative efforts like Hyperledger next to the goals of new technologies like DLT and smart contracts, they are very much aligned. We're looking to reduce inefficiency, increase innovation, and ensure interoperability. We're all looking to do the same thing, and enabling smart contracts to run on different platforms is the first step in driving interoperability. Standards and collaboration are vital to new technologies, and we at Digital Asset have been doing a lot of work with different organizations to help drive the adoption of new standards in relation to new technologies. So to give a little bit of an example, over the last couple of years, we've been working closely with the International Swaps and Derivatives Association, which is the standards body for the $500+ trillion outstanding notional derivatives that are traded globally. So a pretty big deal. We've been working with them to not only standardize how derivatives data and events are represented, but how that data is actually processed. So on the back of this work, Daml is the only smart contract language that ISDA is currently using as a blueprint for how derivatives are traded and managed across the entire trade lifecycle. The bulk of the work we've been doing with ISDA is how you enforce that blueprint to ensure consistency, adoption, and standardization across firms, while providing a common foundation for cross-market consistency and interoperability. So all of this is kind of similar to what we believe this group is trying to achieve with GRID in relation to creating frameworks, data schemas, and semantics for supply chain use cases. This is why we're pretty excited by the prospect of continuing to work with Hyperledger and its members to ensure that efforts like those being undertaken by the different SIGs, which are very important for the industry, are being enforced in an efficient way that is consistent with new technologies, while providing institutions with optionality across their choice of underlying platform. So with that, I'll turn it over to Levy to show the cool stuff and talk about how Daml can be used to easily model rights, obligations, and workflows as they pertain to the supply chain industry. To do that, we're going to use a use case which the Oracle team actually shared with us last summer. Those of you on the call may remember a use case in which Larry Ellison purchased a boat from a manufacturer and the asset was tracked through a simplified supply chain. So Levy is going to actually demonstrate the ease in which you can model the same workflow in Daml. So over to you, Levy.
Okay. All right. I'm going to stop sharing my screen and allow Levy to take over. I'll continue to watch the chat room. If anybody has any questions along the way, pop them in there and we'll try to address them on the fly. But we'll also leave some time for Q&A later in the afternoon.
Okay. Let me just make sure this is kind of the right resolution here. Okay, hopefully you can all see my screen now and a nice black screen at the shell here. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to start a project from scratch, a Daml project from scratch, to model out this workflow that Beth mentioned. I typed Daml new boat at the prompt here. Which is asking the SDK to create a new project entitled Boat. This creates a directory called boat, where with like a little skeleton in there to help you get started on our project here. So I'm going to go ahead and open DAML Studio, which is effectively Visual Studio Code with a couple of sort of nice features to allow us to edit DAML. So I've opened up the, thank you for the documentation here. So I've opened up the main.daml file that was contained in that skeleton, and there's a small asset template to kind of help you get started and to make sure that your SDK is working. So other than sort of the usual things of like syntax highlighting and code completion and things like that, there's also a canonical implementation of the DAML ledger, which is kind of running in the background here. So you can run little multi-party scenarios and see the output and see the active state of the contracts. Okay, so but I'm gonna go ahead and wipe all of this out and start from scratch. Okay, so like we said, we wanted to create a workflow or to create a set of smart contracts that represent boats, sailboats. So I'm gonna go ahead and create a template called boat, which is going to model the ownership, the custody, and the manufacturing of sailboats and different type of nautical vessels. So most of the time when you're writing DAML, you're writing these things called templates, which describe the data and behavior associated with smart contracts on a DAMLized ledger. So in this case, kind of the model that we're gonna use is that a boat is a trilateral agreement between a manufacturer, the owner of the boat, and a custodian of the boat. And so this kind of represents the fact that the manufacturer is the party that builds the boat, the owner is the one whose boat it is, and the custodian, that's where the boat is currently. So it's kind of who made it, who owns it, and who's in charge of it right now, who has possession of it right now. And the way we do that is we say that all three parties here are actually signatories on this contract. And this represents the fact that all three parties have an obligation, some sort of liability on this boat. Whenever I say signatory here, it means that the parties which are following it, they have to do something. They have to do some sort of performance on this contract. In the case of the manufacturer, when they have to, there's presumably some sort of warranty. If something breaks, they need to go fix it. The owner's responsibility is to make sure that thing gets put into dry dock in winter. The other one is you don't want to be foisted to the boat. Like you don't want somebody to just give you a boat. There are a lot of responsibility. Lastly, the custodian's job is to make sure that once they have possession of it, that they don't ding it up or anything like that. And that's what this signatory keyword here means. Oh, and lastly, I'm going to give this thing a name. That's the name of the vessel. And this is all we need to do actually to write a smart contract within DAML. It's not terribly interesting yet, but it at least captures the fact that these three parties have to perform some sort of off-ledger obligation to this boat. And you can already see what I meant when I said that templates represent both the data associated with the smart contract. So in this case, it's just a little name, as well as all of the sort of rights, obligations, and the different ways that these things can change. And we'll get into that a little bit later. But at a very basic, this is all you need to create a smart contract. You can see here that the party keyword is actually encapsulating a lot of the sort of underlying infrastructure. It's abstracting it away from the programmer. So in the DLT space, a party is likely to be a node on a network, or let's say a participant on a node on a network. It's encapsulating all of that cryptography, you know, wallets and things like that, that a developer frankly shouldn't have to worry about as they're outlining the business case, which is all we're doing here. Okay, so I have my smart contract already. So I'm going to create a little test scenario here. Forgive my poor spelling. Where I'm going to set up, let's say spin up a network, like it's a little little model of a network which is running in the IDE here. Okay, so let's say FeedShip is a manufacturer of boats, as I'm told. So we're going to give them a node. Then we have Larry, who is going to be the owner of this boat. And there's going to be a shipper who's going to deliver the boat. Okay, so this just tells the underlying ledger that those are going to be the three parties on this in-memory network. So what I will do is I'm going to create the boat from the point of view of FeedShip. We'll say that the manufacturer is FeedShip. The owner is FeedShip. And the custodian is FeedShip. So this
symbol. A little typo there, Levy, in the owner. Owner equals feed. Thank you.
Just a second. Oh, it doesn't have a name. Forgot to give it a name. There we go. And so this represents the fact that FeedShip manufactured a boat, and for the moment they own it, and they're also the custodian of it. It's at the dry dock here at FeedShip. So I take a look at the result of it, and this looks awful lot like what you do when you do a select star on a database, but it gives you the active contract state of our ledger here, and you could see that. You know, the columns correspond to the fields in boat, and this represents creating effectively a token on a DLT. Now, so this isn't terribly interesting yet because there's no way to transfer this thing, and all of the obligations are on FeedShip. Coincidentally, FeedShip couldn't do something like this. FeedShip couldn't just designate Larry as the owner because we never got the authorization from Larry. And this is what we mean when we identify a party as a signatory. You're never going to be placed inside an obligable position without your consent. Now, right now, FeedShip is the only party here which is expressing consent, and that is why they're present in all three fields of the signatory. And obviously you couldn't do this either. Couldn't give it to the shipper for exactly the same reason. We're missing the authorization from the shipper. So being a signatory obliges you on the one hand, but on the other, it sort of protects you from ever being placed inside a liability that you didn't want, that you didn't expressly approve. Okay, so the next step in this process, after we've created the boat, we've manufactured a boat, is we want to be able to give it to Larry. We want to represent the fact that Larry is now the owner of the boat. And so what we will do for that is we will grant the current owner, which in this case, in this scenario, is FeedShip. But we can grant the current owner the ability to to transfer the vote. And I'm going to do this the wrong way first, and you'll see why it's wrong. So I'm granting a choice to the current owner of the boat to say to transfer it to a different to transfer it to a different owner, and I'll say okay.
In the context of what we said,
could somebody who's not on mute please mute their microphone? Thank you.
And this is basically saying that we're granting the owner the right to create, to destroy the contract on the ledger and create a new one with new ownership. I'm going to try to model this out. I'm going to say, I will assign a variable in my scenario to say, the boat, it has been created by FeedShip, and FeedShip is going to exercise his choice on the boat to transfer ownership to Larry. Okay. And like I said, I told you I would be doing this the wrong way. And the reason this doesn't work is that we never got the authorization from Larry, right? This is all FeedShip acting. Larry doesn't have any say in any of this. So in order to fix that, we're going to create another template which represents this this proposal to Larry to take ownership of the boat, or rather to a new owner to say, hey, do you want this boat? And then they can accept it and reject it. That way they will exercise choice before they're entered into an obligable position. So we're going to create a transfer proposal, which has all of the same sort of characteristics as the previous boat. And there is a new owner who is going to have the opportunity to accept this thing. So who are the signatories on this new transfer proposal contract? Well, actually, it has to be all of the same parties as before, who need to agree to all of the possible consequences of any choice which happens on this contract. Okay, so it's going to be the same set of parties, and we're going to give the new owner to the opportunity to accept ownership of the vessel. Now, what this choice is saying is that, first of all, tear up the transfer proposal. That's implicit in every choice, unless we specify a special keyword, and create the boat, which is identical to the one before, except with one change, that the owner should be now the new owner. And we'll wire up this template to the previous. To the previous transfer choice. So rather than creating the boat, we're going to say it's going to create a transfer proposal. Containing the new owner, as well as effectively a copy of the current boat. So what will happen here is that when I try to transfer this ownership, the boat will be archived and a new transfer proposal will be created. So actually my scenario is already working here because FeedShip tried to transfer ownership. And you can see that there is the active state in our scenario is this transfer proposal. If I click on archive, we can see exactly what happened here. So we first created the boat with FeedShip created the boat. then Featship proposed to Larry to take ownership of that boat, and that's what we have here. So I'm going to get a handle on that proposal, and I'm going to make Larry accept the proposal. Just a second. This is a live demo, so there's going to be bugs.
No problem. We're understanding of that. Thanks. In fact, maybe we should all be helping you here.
Yeah. Find a bug. Exercise for the reader here.
Usually a spelling error, right?
Yeah, it's got to be something like that. Submit feedship to. Was sort of working before. Oh, I know what I did wrong. Anybody in the room spotting there?
Indentation.
No, curious. Oh, it's the indent. So it's indent specific.
No, I forgot the keyword here. I was looking at the aspiring DAML developers in the room here with me. Okay, so I forgot the exercise keyword here. So we're having Larry exercise his choice to accept ownership of this boat. And then we can see what happened here. So we went from Featship having the boat. We went through a transfer proposal, then we accepted on behalf of Larry ownership of this boat. So that's the first part. The next part is, okay, how are we gonna ship this thing to Larry? Well, we're gonna have to do, we can't just put the shipper, like we can't just make a random shipper liable for taking custody of the boat. We have to do sort of the same thing. We have to give the opportunity to the shipper to exercise choice in order to accept this boat. Basically, to accept custody of the boat. So I'm going to actually do something very similar. So it's going to be the owner who's going to be proposing the transfer of this boat. So the owner is able to transfer custody of the boat which is going to go through an intermediate stage where the new custodian has the opportunity to accept. And as you can see, I didn't write this custody proposal template yet, but I will do so shortly. Okay. And what should this custody proposal template represent? It should represent the fact that there is a boat whose custody is in question, and they should have the opportunity to accept the custodianship of the boat. So I'm going to create the custody proposal, and it's very similar to the transfer proposal, except the party is different. With the same set of signatories. Boat custodian and the also we got the manufacturer. And we have to sort of carry these signatures around on all of these proposal contracts. And the reason for that is we're recording the fact that all of these signatories are acknowledging that any consequence from these contracts that they can see on the template, they'll be actually liable for in the end. So that is why the manufacturer remains liable, remains a signatory in all of these proposals, because in the end, whoever gets ownership of the boat is going to, you know, the liability on the manufacturer is going to transfer. If there's a warranty on the boat to fix parts in case it gets dinged up, that liability is going to transfer, or rather the asset side of that is going to transfer to the owner, where the liability will remain on the manufacturer. And that is why we have to sort of keep these responsibilities on all of the templates. And we will say that now the new custodian can accept custody of the boat. So all we're doing is we're creating the boat again, the boat contract again, except we've changed custody here. So it's very similar to the transfer proposal, except now here the custody is changing rather than the ownership. Okay, so let's continue with our scenario here. So now Larry has the boat, and what he's going to do is he is going to propose to transfer custody of the boat to the shipper. This is basically saying, you know, just put something at the end here. This is basically saying, here, shipper, will you accept transferring the boat? Okay. So we can see the scenario results here that, and this is the workflow. First, we have a boat. Second, we have a transfer proposal. Then Larry owns the boat, which is 2-1. And then Larry proposed to the shipper, hey, please move my boat. Okay, so oh, and so we need to accept it as the shipper as well. So we'll say, okay, in the happy path here, we'll say that the shipper is going to accept custody. And in the end, so now there's a boat, it's owned by Larry, it's been manufactured by FeedShip, and the custodian is the shipper. They took custody of the boat now. Last thing we want to be able to do is we want to grant the right to the shipper to claim that they've actually delivered the boat. So that's exactly what we'll do. We'll say, on the original boat contract, we're going to add a third choice, which is only exercisable by the custodian, to say that to claim delivery. And we don't need to write a third template for this, because really this delivery claim is a transfer proposal. We're asking the new custodian, in this case Larry, whether he got the shipment or not, whether he got the boat or not. So all we have to do is create a new transfer we have to create basically a new custody proposal to the owner. Except the new custodian is going to be the owner. So it's the same boat, but the new custodian is going to be the owner. So now there's no choice of, here before when we said transfer custody, we gave a parameter. Who do you want to take custody of it? When the shipper is claiming delivery, he's really saying that, okay, only the new custodian is going to be the owner, and he needs to be okay with that. Okay, so we'll wire that up back to our scenario. So we will say that the shipper, once he's claiming that he's delivered the boat, once he's delivered the boat, he can exercise his choice to claim delivery. Oh, I made a typo, but you know what? I'm gonna fix it.
Yeah, your template.
Yep, here we go. Claim delivery. So we've claimed delivery on the boat, which results in a custody proposal, where that the new custodian is proposed to be Larry. And lastly, because this is the happy path, we're going to have Larry. I forgot to type exercise again. We can say that he accepted custody. And there we go. This is what we needed to do to model this tri-party workflow here. You can already see that it's doing quite a bit because on the one hand, we're encapsulating all of these parties. So we never have to deal with like cryptography or any of the underlying details of the platform. Thirdly, we model out all of the rights and obligations that happened in this workflow. And the way we think about workflows is how do rights, how do obligations change from one state of the ledger to the next. And this DAML model does exactly that. The sort of last thing I wanted to point out is that disclosure is always explicit within our DAML model. So the only people who can see my contract, as indicated by these X's here on the scenario results, are people who have either been specified as a signatory or as a controller. There's no other person who can see the party unless we added an observer. Like let's say we wanted to add and maybe we wanted to do that. Let's add the Coast Guard.
Just want to give you a heads up. We have about 15 minutes till the end of the hour.
Perfect. I think I'm nearly done anyway. So we'll say that the Coast Guard is an observer. They have to certify the vessel in some ways, but they also have to keep track of it. So we've added the Coast Guard as an observer. And in my scenario, we've just added them as an observer on the boat. Note, however, that the Coast Guard has been added to all of this now. So they can see all of the basically they can see all of the details of these transactions. Okay, I think that's all I wanted to do. Let me know. Let me know if there are any questions, and while you think about that, I'm going to show one last thing, which is the navigator. So once I've written up my DAML model, I have access to something like a web browser that can basically builds a UI for you on the fly based on your DAML model that you can demonstrate to end users. So we have to indicate all the parties. So we had Larry, Feedship, the shipper.
Then you have Coast Guard. Right?
And the Coast Guard.
I think it was USCG.
Okay. And I indicate the test scenario that I've created from before. And hopefully if I type DAML start, what will happen is this will spin up a sandbox ledger. It will execute all of the actions, all of the submissions in my scenario. See, that's spell sandbox there. And it will serve a front end that you can use to interact with the ledger.
Which platform is the sandbox running on?
So the thing I just did now is effectively an in-memory implementation of the ledger. However, with very simply, you can specify a Postgres database on which it can run. Also, there's an option to deploy it directly onto Sawtooth as well. So there's, I'm not going to be able to show it right now, but I could have also done something like this. And then I can specify a deploy parameter, which and provide a host and port for my local Sawtooth stack, and it will deploy directly onto Sawtooth.
So the in memory, is that a just a light, you know, version of some proprietary ledger? Is it open source? And if so, which kind?
So this is the sandbox itself is in memory. So it's not like a any brand name, but it is open source. So once you download the SDK, the DAML SDK, the sandbox ledger is a part of that.
Okay.
So it's more, think of it, Marco, as a developer tool. So if a developer just wrote some models and wanted to demonstrate the workflow to a business or operations person who's not really familiar with Visual Studio Code, this is an easy way to demonstrate how it would play out in the real world.
Okay, thanks.
And it is fully faithful to the DAML ledger model. So it's you can connect, for instance, client to it from on your network, and you can sort of develop the client side applications, and the DAML ledger model is going to be completely adhered to. So then once you're satisfied there, you can deploy your DAML model onto any number of hyperledgers or the platform of your choice, and all of your applications will continue to work. You'll have to change things like the keys. You'll have to change, obviously, you'll have to set that up, but that's the only thing you have to change. Okay. So this is the navigator. I logged in as the US Coast Guard here, and you can see all of the active contracts that the US Coast Guard has been disclosed. So you can kind of see the entire workflow that has happened, that they've been disclosed. If I log in now as Larry, there's just one contract. It's the boat that that he bought, and you can see all of the details. All of these buttons here have been wired up.
I can't
up.
Hear you very well. I don't know if it's just me, but all of a sudden,
is this better?
Is it just me?
Yes, I can hear him fine.
I can hear
okay. It might be just me.
Okay. So all of these buttons have been wired up the minute I created my DAML model, and they work. So for instance, if I wanted to transfer custody back to the shipper, this option will work exactly as it did within the IDE. So I'm Larry, I'm gonna log out as Larry and gonna log back in as the shipper. And now there is a custody proposal created for me as a shipper, and I can accept or deny custody. So I'll accept custody.
Okay, a couple questions from those in the group. Amim asked, any plans for Sawtooth integration, which Duncan addressed. Yep, Sawtooth is currently supported by BTP, who is a digital asset partner. And then Levy Soren just asked, do you have an architecture diagram that shows how the pieces work together at a high level? Thanks, Duncan, for showing the link, but perhaps you can just, Levy, show in the IDE the various levels of how DAML fits within a typical deployment.
Okay, so I'm very bad at making slides anyway, so this is going to be some text here. So the main thing that, as Digital Asset as a company, that we produce really is a DAML runtime. This is where DAR files are deployed. You can think of DAR files, they're bytecode files that represent your DAML model. So The first thing that happened, for instance, when I started up .Navigator is that this DAML file got compiled down to this bytecode. And really the job of the DAML runtime is to serve an upstream integration. So this is either REST or gRPC, which will serve your apps. And you know, these apps can be like a React app, or it can be it could be serving a website, or it could be an integration. So the idea is that apps will send and receive notifications from the DAML runtime. On the downstream, you effectively have an adapter to different persistence layers. So this adapter is going to be specific to each persistence layer. So for instance, the Sawtooth integration is going to be effectively a single program which takes the output of the DAML runtime and translates it into the persistence layer of your choice. Very, very importantly, where it's not like we're translating the DAML into any other smart contract language. What ends up happening is that this adapter typically understands certain types of smart contracts that will go onto each of the persistence layers, as well as the feedback. So, for instance, if any contract is created on Sawtooth, the adapter will pick it up and translate it back to the DAML runtime saying like, hey, these three contracts have been created, disclose them to such and such individuals, and these four contracts have been archived. And then the DAML runtime will serve the integration layer and serve it back to the application layer.
Can you give a little bit more clarity on what a persistent layer is? In case for Sawtooth or Fabric or whichever?
So Sawtooth is the persistence layer, right? Or Fabric is the persistence layer.
Okay.
So effectively, however, the persistence layer understands something like, hey, insert this contract on the DLT. That's what the adapter will translate that into any number of those choices.
And is it creating a compiled version, like the bytecode of the smart contract for that persistence layer, or is it, you know, generating it as a Java, like a Java code or Golang and so forth?
Great question. And the answer is no. So these adapters don't need to get recompiled every time you change your DAML layer. This is like a one-time adapter down into the persistence layer. So you can think of it as analogous to something like a JDBC for SQL, right? You can, creates and exercises coming from DAML, the way SQL works is that you translate the text into the native Sybase or Oracle or what have you. But the adapter itself is static. It just understands how to translate creates, archives, and disclosures into the native language of the, not native language, the native message of the persistence layer.
And what's the performance like?
So that will vary based on the persistence layer. Typically, the overhead of running a DAML runtime atop a DLT is really minimal. So a lot of time it hardly ends up being material. And the reason for that is that most of the bottleneck is going to be on the persistence layer itself. So the addition is, it doesn't tend to be very large. Plus it can be parallelized. So However, you know, there's an obvious reason why, because most of the sequencing will happen at the persistence layer, and that's the most of the sequencing will happen at the persistence layer, which means that by definition can't really be parallelized, whereas the all of this can.
The reason I ask that is because Node.js and Java have noticeable performance differences on Fabric. So I'm trying to understand if one was to use DAML, what would be the performance comparison to, let's say, running a smart contract in Java?
I believe the adapter for Fabric has been written in Java. It was not written in Node.js. But like I said, it's sort of a static adapter in that sense. But we can try to find that out to see if we have some benchmarks or metrics on that.
Jim Mason asked a good question. Are there custom policy settings to control data sharing, visibility, and policies, or is that in the DSL itself?
So that's going to be in the DSL itself. So all of the disclosure happens explicitly, unless somebody is a signatory, an observer, or a controller on a contract, they will not be disclosed the contract. They will not be disclosed that contract. There are some exceptions to this, particularly when a party has been involved in a large transaction that involved lots of creates and archives, and they were at some point somewhere along the line, they could deterministically know the consequences of a contract. So in that case, they'll be disclosed that contract. But actually, that's a little bit of an edge case. Unless you're a signatory, observer, or controller, you will not be shared the contract.
And you could set up your templates such that you can share certain data with certain parties along the workflow.
Yeah.
I know we're out of time, Marco. So if anybody has any questions, I encourage you all to go check out daml.com. Docs.daml.com has more documentation as well as information on how to download the software developer kit. If you have any direct questions, you can please, you know, shoot me an email. It's andrew@digitalasset.com or andrew@daml.com. And I can, you know, make sure you get the appropriate response. We'd like to share this this example that Levy mocked up here with the group. So Marco, I'll work with you to figure out how to distribute it to the team. Again, you know, this has been an awesome awesome time. Thank you very much for the hour and the opportunity to showcase some of the stuff that we've been working on over the last 5 or 6 years here at Digital Asset.
I also extend a gratitude for coming on and showing, doing some coding in real time. I know it's not easy, but really appreciate to understand a lot of us in this call. Some of us are technical, some are not, but it was good to see how this works. So again, thanks for everything.
Awesome. Have a great afternoon, everybody.
Thank you.